Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, the latest bomb dropped in the NCAA basketball scandal, and it may have just detonated in Tucson. We broke it down and what that means to head coach Sean Miller and what happens next for the NCAA. Reportedly, allegedly. And we talked some golf today. And if I was talking golf in February, it was because Justin Thomas won again. And oh yeah, the cat back on the course as well. Three excellent guests. Matt Norlander of CBS Sports broke down the mess in college basketball. Dan Marley, the head coach of Grand Canyon U, stopped by to talk about his squad. And Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network got us ready for the upcoming scouting combine. The Daily Jungle starts right now. College basketball had itself a weekend, right? Of course, this is the time of year where college basketball is supposed to have itself a weekend. And then, on top of that, have itself a month. But this weekend was not that kind of weekend. I mean, sure, there were some great moments, like Iowa's Jordan Bohannon intentionally missing a free throw to break the school's consecutive made free throw record set by the legend Chris Street. You know, that was something. But the real stories of the weekend involved who would be playing and who would not be playing, who would be coaching and who would not be coaching. Yahoo's report on Friday morning that named names and listed amounts was bad. But it was not nearly as bad as the follow-up report that included details that Arizona's Sean Miller reportedly was caught in an FBI wiretap allegedly saying that he would pay $100,000. For DeAndre Ayton. Suffices to say, that's easily the biggest allegation so far in this unfolding case. One of the best coaches in the game, leading one of the premier programs in the sport, allegedly talking about paying six figures for a future lottery pick. I'm the guy who might go number one overall. So at this point, we're no longer talking about the elephant in the room. We're talking about an entire herd of elephants in every single room. And they're smashing through the kitchen, they're busting through all the walls, and they're destroying the dining room and wrecking the halls. So here's a quick rundown of who was in and who was out over the weekend. Michigan State's Miles Bridges, clear to play by his school. Texas's Eric Davis Jr., not clear to play by his school. Alabama's Colin Sexton, clear to play by his school. Kentucky's Kevin Knox, clear to play by his school. Arizona's DeAndre Ayton, clear to play by his school. Arizona's Sean Miller, not clear to coach by his school. So Miller wasn't able to coach, but his player was able to play. And then he went out and he dropped 28-18 on Oregon. A little weird, right? But then again, this whole thing is more than a little weird. It's a colossal mess, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. At this rate, it would not be surprising if there are leaks about different programs and players every week between now and the end of the season. And yes, the fact of the matter is, 100 grand would be a bargain for this player. When you see this guy play, you can see why any NBA team would happily pay 50 times to get this guy right now. But paying him even 10 bucks is obviously against NCAA rules, which is why the rules have to change. This system is completely busted. Completely and utterly busted. Now, this may have worked when college sports really were only about student activities, when basketball players were still playing on peach baskets, when teams took trains to games, when fans waved pennants in the stands, when the players really were student athletes and the term amateurism really meant something. But that was a hell of a long time ago. That's not the way it is right now. Now it's a multi-billion dollar industry. Millions and millions are at stake for every single school and every coach. Everybody is making money except for the people who actually make the money, the players. And when you're worth millions and you get paid nothing, somebody will find a way to pay you. The black market will emerge. So the NCAA's got to change. They have to change. In terms of what they change to? Hell, go to the Olympic model. Let athletes have endorsements. Allow agents to come out of the shadows. Any of it. In fact, all of it. But you can't do none of it because what you're doing right now does not work. And you can't be surprised when this sort of thing happens. Don't even pretend to be surprised when the biggest coaches and the biggest programs get caught because they're the ones who have the most at stake. and the programs, if there are any left that are playing by the rules, are going to get hurt. The changes have to be real, they have to come soon, and it has to happen before this entire thing falls apart. And yes, sure, it's going to get worse before it gets any better. We'll hear other names, other dollar amounts, and there has to be change. There has to be change. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, good morning. Nice to have you on. How are you?
Tremendous to be with you, Jim. I'm doing well. How are you?
My man, I'm great. Good to talk to you, Matt. Thanks so much. Hey, take me back to Friday when the reports first started out that documents for former NBA agent Andy Miller, Christian Dawkins, and ASM Sports, when those reports first started to come down on Friday, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was we've had a lot of silence in college basketball over the past few months, and I'd spoken with a lot of coaches who had basically come to me and other media members and talking among their own fraternity and said, what are you hearing? What's going to happen? And it had been almost too quiet. So the report itself had some surprising details in it, and the timing might have thrown some people off, but there was an expectation something was bound to happen here, and in fact it has happened. The details therein, as you have said and as a lot of people have said, but we need to keep in context a lot of what was on that and what may or may not be true, because the Christian Dawkins documents and the alleged expense reports, they're just numbers attached to names. There are no receipts. There is no corroboration that can be held right now. And there's a big difference between Christian Dawkins meeting with Wendell Carter's mother for a lunch and Dennis Smith Jr. allegedly being afforded a $70,000 loan before he went to the NBA.
Matt Norlander joining us. He's a senior writer for CBS Sports. All right, Matt, so Sean Miller did not coach Arizona on Saturday, but DeAndre Ayton did play for Arizona on Saturday. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense to me, knowing what we know now here. Given, let's talk Miller first here.
Sure.
There is no way that Arizona could have put him on the sideline after the story came out from ESPN.com and what was put out there that he could potentially have been discussing with Christian Dawkins over the phone. There's a lot of things that Arizona needs to do to clear up and to make public before Miller could potentially coach there. But DeAndre Ayton has had two different legal representatives come out aggressively and deny that any sort of payment has ever been made for DeAndre to go to Arizona. And with that, Arizona did some in-house interviews. Ayton's representatives have also said that he has been investigated and interviewed by the FBI. So from Ayton's perspective, he's already been put through the ringer, even though this became public in the past 72 hours. He's already been put through the ringer, Jim. So this wasn't a surprise to them. Arizona was clearly confident enough, and let's also be honest here, at this point in the season with Arizona trying to get a number one, number two, number three seed and make a Final Four, they already know that with what they have, they might as well just play him. There's not a huge risk there anyway, because if it ends up getting vacated, then so be it. The bigger issue is more Miller, but I understand why people were confused with Ayton being on the floor. He's got nothing to lose at this point, and his statements from his representatives were extremely aggressive, and to my eyes, just a little bit surprising in that regard.
And he does not figure to be there much longer anyway. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, Matt, so once again, I hear what you're saying. We don't know exactly what is true and what's not true. We know what's been alleged. We know what's been reported. What about Sean Miller? If, in fact, the report is true, what is his future then in college basketball?
If it is true, Jim, and if it is true, then I will never say never, because disgustingly, Dave Bliss is still coaching and has gotten multiple jobs since the disaster and the disgrace that happened at Baylor. I will never say no coach will ever, ever coach again. But if it is true that Sean Miller was legitimately discussing some sort of $100,000 transaction in relation to DeAndre Ayton attending Arizona, he's never going to be a head coach again at a high major level. It's going to potentially land a significant show cause. But is it true? Let's just apply logic to this situation here, okay? There are no quotes in the ESPN story, and without quotes, it would indicate that the writer did not actually hear what's on the wiretap and is taking it from a source. We could potentially have a situation here, one person at the FBI told the defendant's lawyer something, and then that got relayed to someone else, and then it gets relayed to the reporter. Well, that's a game of telephone, and that's a really dangerous game to play. I'm not saying that definitely happened here, but it could potentially be what's on the table. ESPN has already offered retractions and corrections regarding that story. And for Miller to go on the record with the statement and say he will be, quote, vindicated, to me indicates he has supreme confidence that what is on that wiretap either if he's in trouble, it'll never be uncovered, or he knows that he was never having that conversation. Because the key distinction here is, Jim, everyone in the business expected, at the very least, Sean Miller to be put on administrative leave before Arizona's game Saturday night. That didn't happen. He didn't resign. He hasn't been fired. Clearly, everyone at Arizona is believing, or at least counting on Sean Miller in his case. It must be really compelling, because right now, no further action has been taken.
Clones, can you give me a minute so I can talk to you about Casper? So what more can I tell you about Casper that I have not already told you? Casper products are cleverly designed to mimic human curves, providing supportive comfort for all kinds of bodies. You spend one-third of your life sleeping, so you should be comfortable. The experts at Casper work tirelessly to make a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. I own a Casper mattress, and I always will. I will never forget the first night that I slept on my Casper. And I have had an amazing night of sleep every single night since then. And right now, you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Try it out for 100 nights, and if you don't love Casper as much as I love mine, they will come and pick it up for free and give you a full refund. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting Casper.com and using the promo code JUNGLE at checkout. Once again, promo code JUNGLE at Casper.com to save $50 on select mattresses. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply. That's Casper, and now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Matt Norlander joining us. Once again, Matt, I'm listening to what you're saying. I hear exactly what you're saying, but I'll pose this question. What about the agency side of this? For instance, is Andy Miller and ASM a rogue agency, or can we assume that this type of thing, if in fact they were engaged in that behavior, that this is happening with other agents and agencies?
I spoke with a number of coaches on Friday, many of them who have been on your show, some who have been on your show this very season, and all of them said, this is one agency. They could have, if you had changed this up, and found a different agent, a different agency, and raided their offices, there'd be so many more names. You'd be swapping the names that we see now for names in other places. This is not a rogue thing. This is how the sport has worked for decades. And again, though, see, it's easy to talk about this and kind of lump everything together, but there is a difference between potential nefarious action of giving players tens of thousands of dollars in loans or trying to get shoe companies to organize for hundreds of thousands of dollars to get athletes involved so that they might sign with those agencies and be affiliated with those shoe companies when they get to the NBA. That is so, so very different than potentially sitting down with an agent, which is totally legal, while you are 16 or 17 years old. Maybe your parents are there, you share a meal, and you simply are trying to get a feel for what this business is going to be like. Because let's face it, a lot of these kids and a lot of their parents don't understand the business of major basketball at the NBA level, at the college level, and yes, at the prep level, at the AAU level, and so you need to get more familiar with it. So it's not a bad thing to meet with agents, but it becomes bad when you're flagrantly breaking the rules and trying to move tens of thousands of dollars. Again, that doesn't happen with every case, but it happens across the board with pretty much everyone to a varying degree.
Matt Norlander joining us. All right, Matt, go back to your point about you've talked to a number of coaches. So when you talk to coaches, do you get the sense that the coaches that are in the sport now, are they shocked? Are they disgusted? Or is there a part of them that feels like this is just the way things are done and have been done for a long time?
You know, it would depend on who you talk to with that, because there are some coaches that will say, you know, I want no part of this, and I'm disgusted by my contemporaries who do this, but other ones understand that a lot of this happens before they get to campus, okay? Miles Bridges' mother potentially having a lunch with Christian Dawkins, that would have happened in May of 2016 before Bridges even got to Michigan State. And so they don't really necessarily frown upon that because, one, they can't control it. One coach mentioned to me, you know, it's a hard enough time trying to keep track of what my kids are doing on the weekend. I'm not going to be able to assign a task force to see what our recruits are doing before they even get to campus, even after they've committed. So most coaches don't really have an issue with that. And this is why, even though some are uneasy with this is why people might have expected, oh, Miles Bridges' name is in this report, Kevin Knox, Colin Sexton, all these players, Wendell Carter. Well, guess what? They all played. And the reason that they all played is because those universities reviewed these relatively minor infractions and confirmed with the NCAA that everything, as far as they're concerned, is fine. Because at the end of the day, the NCAA doesn't want to have to deal with this stuff that is relatively minor. And I have to note, Jim, Mark Emmert went on CBS on Saturday and even said he thought the current model for the NCAA as it pertains to players not being able to have official affiliations with agents before they get to college, that's a little outdated. Hockey and baseball, you can do that at the college level. So we should and could be seeing change to that. And that's why those players I mentioned, Knox, Sexton, Bridges, Wendell Carter, they're going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. Unless more information comes out, you're not going to see this like massive chaos with number one seeds and two seeds and three seeds not having their stars. No, the tournament will go on just as sure as the sun will rise, and these big players, which help sell this massive event, will be on the floor.
They have to do it. I mean, there's a reason for it. Matt Norlander joining us. So, Matt, bottom line, I mean, the model does not work. Emmert himself admits as much. The model doesn't work, so how does the NCAA handle this? And when the dust does settle, where does college basketball go from here?
There is a ton of cynicism among the coaching community right now at the commission that Emmert put into action last fall that's led by Condoleezza Rice. There's really good people on that committee. But one coach told me, I don't work in Washington, D.C. How am I going to go in and fix the tax problems with this country? It's kind of similar when you're asking respected business people that don't work in the college industry on a day-to-day or week-to-week or month-to-month basis. How are they going to be asked to come up with a plan that overhauls everything? So there's a lot of cynicism about this well-intentioned committee from Mark Emmert. What I think is going to be even more important is for that committee to rely on coaches and agents and runners and anyone else in the business to say, here are the three or four biggest issues with the sport right now going forward and what we have to change. Agent affiliation, you need to strongly consider college athletes to be allowed to make money off their likeness with the Olympic model, starting effective immediately or as soon as you possibly can, so that if the Duke bookstore wants to sell Marvin Bagley III jerseys, Marvin Bagley III is going to reap benefits off of that. That's the key thing, and I know a lot of people don't give Emmert a lot of credit because they might just think he's an empty suit. His words don't mean anything. That's totally valid. But here's the deal. We are at a huge point in the history of the NCAA. If this story, if the FBI story, and what is still to come, by the way, if this doesn't affect change, and I mean significant change to allow athletes to be able to make money off of their name and to have agent affiliations, if this doesn't happen now, then the NCAA is totally ruined forever and a complete joke. They have to take advantage of this. I do believe Emmert is aware of that, is going to try to save his name and reputation in the process.
All right, so in terms of San Diego, we get word late on Friday that our San Diego affiliate, the Mighty 1090, is dropping the show. Just like that. You're done. We're dropping the show. I get that word late Friday. Now, given that San Diego is where the jungle really took hold and the history that we have in that market, knowing these things, I'm furious. And given the history in that market, and with that station in particular, I'm even more furious with the way that that was handled. But as furious as I am about that situation, and as furious as I am with the way it was handled, there is some good news here. The good news is there's so many ways to get this show right now. So if you're in San Diego, you probably already have this news. You probably already know they're pulling this show and that they made that decision and informed us. They did it, then told us. But if you're a listener in San Diego and you're listening to 1090 AM, you're still covered. We started the year by simulcasting this show on CBS Sports Network. So you can both listen and watch this show on DirecTV Channel 221. You can watch and listen to this show on Dish Channel 158. Additionally, because we're now on satellite, you can listen to this program on Sirius Channel 213, XM Channel 201. If for whatever reason these options do not work for you, there are still other options. What you want to do is call us at 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. If you don't get CBS Sports Network, if you're not a satellite subscriber, there are still other ways to get the show. You know, something like this goes down 20 years ago, it's a real problem, a huge problem. And to be fair, it is a problem. It's still a problem. I'm angry with the decision, and I'm even more angry that it was handled the way that it was handled. However, there are plenty more options now than there would have been years ago. Lots of different ways to get the show. In the meantime, we are considering other opportunities. We will be back on the air in that market full time. And as soon as we determine exactly where we are and when that is, I will let you know. In the meantime, once again, if you're in San Diego and you're upset, and I'm not going to tell you what to do or what not to do. I'm just here to say there are other ways to get the show. I want to be clear about that. I'm not here to tell you what to do or what not to do or how to feel about this or not, or how not to feel about this. I'm here to tell you there are other ways to get this show. Listen and watch on CBS Sports Network. Listen on Sirius Channel 213, XM Channel 201. If you want to give me a call and talk about that, you know, I'm here, 1-800-636-8686. You know, the situation, though, it's a very different deal than losing an affiliate. That's never a good thing. You never, ever want to lose an affiliate, but San Diego is different. I mean, I think even people who don't live in San Diego understand why San Diego is different. That's where I got my start. That's where we had so much good history, and with that particular radio station, too. 1-800-636-8686. Once again, there are other places where you can get this show. If you need help, give us a call, tweet at me, tweet at Adam Hawk. We will tell you exactly where to go. We are here to help. If you're listening to 1090 in San Diego, I'm told our last show on that station is Wednesday. So you want to make plans. If you want to find the show, there are other ways to get it, but that is the last day that we're going to air on that station. Once again, we are talking to others in the market. As soon as we know where and when, we will let you know where that is. But in the meantime, CBS Sports Network, Sirius Channel 213, XM Channel 201, and then above and beyond that, there's still other ways to get it. Just make the phone call, ask us, and we will set you straight. Dan Marley is my guest. Dan, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jim?
Good. Good to visit. Dan, thanks so much. Let me ask you first about your win over Utah Valley on Saturday, 60-59. That's a team, and I'm just going to jump right into it, Dan. That's a team that comes at you with a lot of size. It's a physical game. What did you make of the way your guys responded to that challenge and found a way to win that game?
Well, you know, I thought we played well. We struggled a little bit this year with our ability to score, but defensively we've been really good. And last night was no exception. I thought defensively we're good and able to hang in. They got a lot of grad transfers, guys that have been around and really can spread the floor, and they got a really good big guy. So proud of our guys to battle back and to win our second here in a row. And we got one more, and then we're off to Vegas to play in the WAC tournament, which we're excited because this is the first year that we're eligible to make the NCAA tournament. So everybody's excited.
You know, I'm anxious to talk to you about that. One more thought about that game. You know, it seemed like a really gritty, tough win. The kinds of things that defined you as a player. So when you see your team play the way they did on Saturday, how much pride is that for you as a head coach? And do they remind you of how you approached the game when you played?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think every head coach wants his team to take their personality and the way they played or the way they coach. And that's what I've really stressed for our guys here for the last 5 years, to play hard every night and to get after defensively and do the things that they do. So I was very proud of our guys. Every night they go in and they give it their all, and I push them extremely hard. And that's the fun thing for me of coaching college basketball, that these guys will run through a wall for you and they really want to get better. So I love coaching at GCU, and I have fantastic players.
Dan Marley joining us. You mentioned also it's your first season of postseason eligibility. You're getting ready for that conference tournament. This is part of the transition to Division I basketball. So how different was the entire season knowing that there was a possible spot in the NCAA tournament waiting for you if you handled your business? Did it amp up the intensity even more?
Yeah, it's been different because when I was hired here, 4 years ago, the expectation for us, which is a huge expectation, was to make the tournament in our first year. And I've coached that way. Our coaching staff has coached that way since day one. There's been a lot of pressure on us this year. We were picked preseason to win the league. New Mexico State won it again this year. They're a very good team. But our guys are starting to play better, and they have an understanding that it's the three games here next week that really matter. And they're excited about it. We've had some great strides. We won 81 games in our first 4 years, which is a record for a team that's transitioning from Division II to Division I. So our guys have done a terrific job of building a culture and winning right away. We have a great campus, and our student section is one of the best student sections of all the country.
Hey, listen, Dan, you would not have taken on that opportunity or that challenge if you didn't think that you could have success. But when you and I spoke about this on this show 2 years ago, when you first got that call from Jerry Colangelo, you knew there was an opportunity and a chance to build something. Did you know, though, that you could build it as quickly as you have?
Yeah, I sat down with Mr. Colangelo, who, you know, when he calls, you listen.
Sure.
You know, he drafted me with the Suns. He won a World Series championship with the Diamondbacks. He's turned around USA Basketball, the Hall of Fame. So when he called me, I knew that Grand Canyon was going to be something special. And our president, President Mueller, has a great vision. And when I sat down to talk to both of them, I saw what they wanted and what they expected and everything that they were going to allow me to do. I knew it was going to be a position where we could be very successful right away. And we've been able to do that.
Dan Marley joining us. Dan, I wonder about that journey. I mean, the win was the 100th of your coaching career. I know you'll make it about the program. I know you'll make it about the players. But when you look at that number, how different are you as a head coach at win number 100 than you were as a head coach at win number one?
Oh, I'm a lot different. You know, I didn't know a whole lot when I entered the college game. I was a pro coach with the Suns for 6 years. And, you know, I got there kind of green, didn't know what to expect. And I've just learned, like our players have. I think I'm getting better every game. I have a coaching staff that works extremely hard. And now that we're eligible for the tournament, we're able to start recruiting different types of players, which is exciting. We have 7 international players. We go all over the world to recruit. And now we're starting to look at these really good high school players here in the state. So everything's starting to change for us for the better.
We're talking to Dan Marley. You know, speaking of recruiting, Josh Braun was your first recruit when you took over and was named the WAC Preseason Player of the Year. The season maybe has not gone quite the way that he would have liked from a personal stats standpoint, but when you were first recruiting him, you were recruiting him to a program that could not go to the NCAA tournament until his redshirt senior season. Knowing that, how did you approach that recruitment process?
Well, you know, you've got to tell those kids they're going to have a chance to come play. And I told Josh that when I watched tape of him, because I had just gotten there, and he reminded me of me in high school. You know, I was a five-man in high school, never shot jumpers, and Josh was kind of the same way. He was a really powerful 6'4" guy that blocked shots, rebound, was able to score. And I said, Josh, you can be my first recruit. You can help the culture here at Grand Canyon. You can build something special, and you can always look back at what you've been able to done. And then your senior year, have a chance to go to the NCAA tournament. I tell you, he's been everything and more that we've ever expected. And, you know, you're right, he hasn't had a great year, but what he's been able to do at Grand Canyon and to build our culture and the type of kid he is, there was no better kid to have as your first recruit than Josh Braun.
Dan Marley joining us. Dan, when you look at what you've done there at Grand Canyon, and again, I know that you'll talk about the players and the program, and I understand all that, but it's pretty amazing what you've accomplished already. What's the upside here? I mean, I've got profound respect, for instance, Dan, with Gonzaga and what they've done, and I know it's kind of a tough comparison to make, but can you be that good? What's your upside there? If you stay there and you keep grinding the way you are and you get the kind of players you can, and now you're tournament eligible, what is the upside, the max upside?
Well, that's what exactly it is. When I sat down with President Mueller, he mentioned Butler and Gonzaga. He said there's no reason that we can't be that. And that's what he expects. And that's what we've grown to expect, too. So just in our 5th year, we've won 100 games. We've been second the last 3 years in the WAC. We still have a checking to be second here. We've been to Duke. We've played at Louisville. Louisville's played in our place. We played at Kentucky, all over the places. So we're going to continue to play better and better teams and get better players. So if we don't get to that top 25 level, then I don't think I've succeeded here. And that may take a little longer than anybody really wants, but it's hard to build a program and to get that sense of winning so early. But that is the top, is that we can be the next Gonzaga or Butler.
Dan Marley, my guest. Dan, finally, as a coach and somebody who's been around the game a long, long time, what is your reaction when you see the reports that have come out since the start of the season regarding corruption in college basketball?
Well, you know, it's a mess, and I don't think anybody's surprised. This has been going on forever, so it's disappointing. But now that the FBI is involved, things are starting to come out, and it is disappointing. But like I said, nobody's really surprised. Hopefully we can end up cleaning some of this stuff up, and the NCAA can go another direction and figure some things out.
So, Dan, what would you do if you want to clean this thing up? What's the first thing you would do?
Well, you know, I don't know, but I don't think the answer is paying players. I don't see that. I'm a big guy that the players are, you know, paid with their scholarships and the books and the classes and that stuff. And, you know, our kids get a great cost of attendance. They get $5,700 a year, which is top 3 in the nation. So I think they just have to do a better job of cleaning up the little rules. Some of these kids need meals, and you know, as a coach, you're so you're afraid to do so much, and you want to help these kids. I think you have to clean up the little things and just be more common sense in the game.
Dan Marley joining us. Dan, just one quick follow. Do you think that, I mean, there's always going to be that black market that exists for the players that outvalue room and board? Like, I don't for a second would not say that scholarship is not a valuable thing, because it is. It really is. But for the guys that are worth so much more than that, is there not going to be that black market? And will somebody not always jump in to try to fill that void?
Well, I think there will always be somebody trying to fill that void. I think the one and done is a dumb rule. I think kids should be able to go and play right out of high school if they're able to. Some of these kids come and they're not really interested in college or going to classes and things like that. But there's always going to be corruption out there. And that's why I said that nobody's ever really surprised at what's going on. So it's a tough decision for the NCAA to make, but somebody's got to do something for sure.
All right, so now if you're in this business long enough, you'll eventually talk about everything. And I've been in this business long enough. I'm not going anywhere now. Not for a long time. In fact, I love what I'm doing. I'm not going anywhere. But I have been in this game a long time. And knowing that, I will get to everything at some point. You stay in this game long enough, you will talk about literally everything. This is just how it goes. Eventually, everything is a topic. Strange press conferences. Weird play calls. Hell, even a figure skater ordering hits on an opponent. Eventually, it will all come around. But there's one thing that I never expected to be talking about on my show, and it's something that I have talked about numerous times in the last couple of years. The so-called flat earth truthers. This has been a topic more times than I care to admit. It started first with the rogue Canadian tenor, going all rogue Canadian tenor on O Canada at the MLB All-Star Game. Then it was Kyrie. Kyrie, who either believes that a round earth is a hoax or was running a hoax that he believes that a round earth is a hoax. And then it was Sammy Watkins. And now it's, wait for it, Geno Smith. Geno freaking Smith. One thing to think it, quite another to break out the phone and jump onto Twitter with it. On Saturday, Geno tweeted, "I've been studying this whole flat earth versus globe thing. And I think I may be with Kyrie on this. Before you judge, do some HW. But what do you guys think?" I mean, first off, this is Geno Smith's Twitter account, right? The same Geno Smith who missed a Jets team meeting in California because he messed up the time zones. But now this guy's talking about whether or not the earth is round. Fantastic. Hey, memo to the New York Giants and a question. How you feel now? How do you feel now? You benched Eli Manning to start a guy who's not sold on whether or not the earth is round. And I think my favorite part of this thing is him saying that he's been, quote, studying this whole flat earth versus globe thing. Like it's actually a thing. I mean, that makes about as much sense as saying I've been tackling this whole gravity versus no gravity thing. I think I've come up with something. I'm not sure what's better. The initial tweet from Geno or some of his responses, like this one. Quote, "It wasn't YouTube. It started with an article on astronomy, which then leads to the Earth debate. I, too, was in the mindset of it. No way. It's not round until I listened. Still not sold, but it's worth a look." Once again, I love that he's referring to it as the Earth debate. Like there's an actual serious debate that actual serious people are discussing in the halls of universities, and not something bandied about by kooks in internet chat rooms. And then there's this one, quote, "I find it funny how you all assume I believe Earth is flat, LOL. I just think you guys should have an open mind because, as we know, a lot of the truths that we thought were true actually aren't." Yeah, just have an open mind. That's all he wants. Just have an open mind. That's all he's asking for. That's frequently the fallback for somebody who's actually pretty into an insane idea. I love it how people who have the most closed minds ever, or people who are into the most insane ideas ever are telling the rest of us to have an open mind. But you don't really just want to nail their colors to the mast, right? Just have an open mind, man. Free your mind from the constraints of physics and science. Just open up your mind. Open up your mind. Listen, I understand this much. When Geno Smith is rifling passes into the stands, I do for one question whether or not gravity exists. So it does make sense that he might question whether or not the earth was round. And one person did point out, we have seen pictures of the earth from the moon. It's a good point. Very, very good point. We have seen those pics. However, Geno was ready. Geno said, quote, in this day and age, with Photoshop and everything else, you trusting a picture? Any video footage? End quote. Damn, that's a strong rebuttal. I mean, I am tempted to say that Photoshop was not a thing when Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, but I'm guessing Geno is already ready to go with the faked on a soundstage take with that. Look, Geno did not exactly present an organized argument one way or another. I guess you could say that he was all over the globe. I mean, flat plane with it. Like with this tweet, quote, I'm not debating on this topic. I just want to see the responses. I think it's a good conversation, end quote. You see, gee, that's the thing. It's not a good conversation. It's a completely ridiculous, totally embarrassing conversation that makes anybody who heard it or saw it dumber. And as always, I'm not really sure what to make of guys going flat earth truther. I mean, they're either faking their belief and they're weird, or they're serious and they're seriously weird. I'm totally in favor of questioning a lot of things. But if you're going to question science, the earth, and the moon, don't do it on Twitter. At least have the courage to do it to Buzz Aldrin's face.
You're the one who said you walked on the moon when you didn't. Calling the kettle black, if I ever thought of it. Saying
Will
I misrepresented myself.
Get away from me.
You're a coward and a liar and a thief.
And you've got a broken face.
And a thief.
Imagine this cat following this guy around and taunting him with that. You didn't do that. You never walked on the moon. You're a coward and a liar and a thief.
And a
really? Because you got a busted face now. That old guy swinging on him was awesome. I would never condone violence, but that dude rolling up on him and antagonizing him and calling him a liar and a thief.
And a thief.
Got him pretty much what he deserved. 1-800-636-8686. So the question is, does he really believe it? Or are guys like that just nothing but huge trolls? Probably a little bit of both. But add that one to the list as well. Also, I want to talk more about Isaiah Thomas saying that the Cavaliers panicked when they moved him after 15 games. Pretty much, IT. Pretty much, and understandably so. Now would be a very good time for the T-Wolves to panic. Jimmy Butler out. Good news, bad news. Good news is, he didn't shred his knee, didn't tear his ACL. The bad news is, it is a meniscus. He's already had surgery. He's been ruled out indefinitely. Rich in the 970 tweets, the flat earth believers are a group of free-thinking, innovative, brill. I'm just kidding. They're all dumbasses. Rome, what's wrong with being a flat bread pizza truther? Signed, Dane Cookies. Damasio in Albuquerque. And Finding Rebo tweets, clearly that teammate's punch did more damage to Geno's melon than we thought. Hey, listen, he's not the only one. There are others. There are others who believe it. Let's go to Maine. Emery in Maine. Emery, nice to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Romy. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Nice to have you.
Listen, I got to tell you a quick story before I give you the solution. Somebody told me that your show bleeped, don't listen to it. So I kind of fell along. Then all of a sudden one day, somebody else had it on, and I listened and go, oh my word, this is a freaking awesome show. I've been loyal ever since, 10 years. Jim, my solution to the round flat theory,
Okay.
Yes.
Golf ball round, correct? Quarter flat, correct? Why are you not looking up at the moon and seeing a flat line? Because it's round.
Astronomy, because it's round. All right, Emery, thanks for settling that. Listen, you flat earth truthers, can you believe? You can believe what you want to believe, and whatever gets you through it is fine. For one, I happen to believe that we really did land on the moon. I don't think that that was some hoax that was set up in a studio or a soundstage. I really think we landed on the moon. Just as I really think the world is not flat. Daniel Jeremiah is back. So as you start to look at the prospects who are attending, who are some of the guys who have the most at stake in Indianapolis?
Well, I always go to any combine saying it's the corners, because if you're looking at testing and who it matters for, that's the position where you can see your stock go up or down based on that. Because, look, if you're a wide receiver that runs 4.6, although that's not ideal, the corner's got to run 4.6 right next to you to cover you. If you flip it over to the defensive side of the ball, you're a corner that runs 4.6 trying to run around with some of these guys, you know, 4.3, 4.4 guys, you've got problems. So that group as a whole has the most at stake.
We're talking to Daniel Jeremiah. Let's go to the quarterbacks. I know that you look at this pretty closely. When you look at the quality of the quarterbacks in this class, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I think it's really good. I think there's quality at the top. I think there's tremendous depth. You can go 7 or 8 quarterbacks deep in this class. You know, this is what we do. Everybody picks these guys apart. But at the end of the day, when you stack them up, I think there's a lot of starting quarterbacks. And whether that's year 1, year 2, or year 3, I think we'll look back, you know, 4 or 5 years from now and realize, man, we could have, you know, 6, 7 guys that are starting in really solid quarterbacks out of this group. So I'm pretty bullish on this whole crop.
Daniel Jeremiah is my guest. All right, so where do you come out on Sam Darnold? I bring this up because over the course of the season and since the end of the season, you've got questions emerging about his motion, maybe even his hand size. Why don't we start with the mechanics and the motion? What questions are there with his motion, and what would teams like to see between now and the draft in terms of that and changes he might make?
Yeah, well, the good thing is I can show you tape where he's tightened it up, so I know he's capable of doing that. Every now and then, I think he just gets away from him a little bit and he can get long, but I think you continue to drill that into him. Really, more importantly, even than just the motion, it's just his offhand. He just had a bad habit when he got under pressure and he moves in the pocket. He removes his offhand from the ball and then tries to get away, and that's led to some of the fumble issues. I don't think his hands are going to be that small. I think that's something, again, you just continue to drill into him. And having a chance to go watch him work out, maybe 2 weeks ago, Jordan Palmer, who's training him, Carson's brother, has him walk around with the ball in his left hand when he's not throwing, just to kind of constantly drill it into your head, hey, keep your offhand on the football. So that's a focus for him. But, Jim, he can do everything, man. He can do stuff in pocket, out of pocket, on schedule, off schedule, drive throws, touch throws. He's a great kid, too. So I think the ceiling is very high for Sam.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us. Daniel, one more thought about that. It always seems funny to me when guys get worked up about hand measurement, but you certainly know this better than I do. How important is hand measurement, and what kind of numbers are teams looking for?
Yeah, I think anything under 9 just kind of spooks you a little bit. There's just not been a history of many guys ever having hand size under 9 and being successful. The reason why you care about it is because if you're playing in wet weather, cold weather, just having a better grip on the football for obvious reasons makes it easier to play the position. And this kind of goes back to Ron Wolf and the Packers and what they were looking at to play in that weather, in those conditions. You know, Brett Favre, huge hands. Aaron Rodgers, huge hands. So the fact that Cleveland has the first pick and you look at John Dorsey coming from the Ron Wolf tree, there's been some focus there. But, you know, 9 is kind of the magic number. I think Sam will be fine there. Goff was 9, 9 and an 8th, right around there. We've seen, you know, Eli Manning, I think, is 9 and an 8th. So just be over that 9 number, and I don't have any doubt that Sam will be there.
We're talking to Daniel Jeremiah. All right, so what about Baker Mayfield? He comes out recently. He tries to shoot down the comparisons to Johnny Manziel. How accurate are those comparisons, and then what is the biggest question for him to answer this week?
Well, I think there's – you know, look, there's no comparison in terms of, you know, the substance abuse questions that existed with Johnny. And then obviously, you know, what we found out about that after the fact was a real concern. I don't hear those same concerns about Baker. Just the word maturity is the one that keeps coming up, and really, what's his number one interest here? Just, you know, he loves the attention. He thrives on the attention. But I think some people interpret that a different way and say, okay, does this guy want to be a celebrity or does he want to be a quarterback? That's something that he's got to kind of convey in the interviews when he gets to meet with the teams. But, Jim, he can make every throw. He can move around. I don't think he's nearly the athlete that Russell Wilson is, but I think that's the comparison you're shooting for if you're hoping he's going to be successful.
Yeah, that is the comparison you hear. Daniel, are you concerned about his height, or would he measure a little bit taller than Russell Wilson? I agree with you. I mean, to compare anybody to Russell Wilson is kind of a big stretch right now, given what he's accomplished. But in terms of size and height, is that an issue to you?
No, I think, you know, you get used to – Andy Reid used to always say when we were in the combine meeting, when we had undersized quarterbacks, I think he actually even said it to Russell Wilson when I was in that room. You know, hey, you learn how to throw between buildings, not over buildings. And Russell Wilson, having played behind one of the bigger offensive lines – at Wisconsin, they were huge across the board, and he functioned fine. Baker playing behind a huge offensive line at Oklahoma and functioned fine. So the height thing doesn't bother me as much. It's just, let's just make sure this guy's wired the right way and willing to commit what you got to commit to be successful at that position. Because the undersized quarterbacks, if you want to look at that group of guys that have been really, really good, it's two guys. It's Russell Wilson and Drew Brees. And when you talk about intangibles, work ethic, all that stuff, I mean, those guys are unique.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, and not to belabor this point about Baker Mayfield, but, I mean, could this guy literally walk right into an NFL locker room right now or an NFL huddle and lead from the front? Do you think he's got that kind of presence right now?
I think that's the split. I'm cautious. I'd say I'm cautiously optimistic. That's the question I like asking the former players we have around the network. How are you guys going to respond to that? Because normally the motto is rookies just come up and be seen and not heard. And show me, and then eventually you can tell me. And I don't envision this kid coming in and taking a back seat. That's not his personality.
Right. Daniel Jeremiah, my guest. Now, months ago, you called your shot, and you said that Lamar Jackson would be the most polarizing prospect if he came out. Knowing that, and there's been a lot of discussion, are you at all surprised that there have been suggestions that he should move to wide receiver?
Not really. I think some of it's generational, you know, like – if you look at the Dan Fouts era, you know, if Lamar Jackson was coming out in that era, he would have played wide receiver. They wouldn't have given him a chance to play quarterback. The game was played differently. Now I just think it's been proven that with some of the RPO stuff and being able to build an offense around a player, that you can do it and you can be successful. You can win games and you can put up numbers. So when we saw the Houston Texans offense morph completely around Deshaun Watson, which didn't resemble anything that Bill O'Brien had ever done before. So, yeah, you got to be creative. But, no, I mean, the kid can play. You got to give him a chance.
You know, you had Michael Vick on your podcast recently, and he said Jackson is, quote, 5 times better than what I was when I was at Virginia Tech. I mean, that's incredibly high praise. When you break down your film on Jackson, what are his biggest strengths and what are his biggest weaknesses, and what did you make? What did you think when Vick said that on your podcast?
Well, I pushed Vic on that a little bit, and then, you know, it got down to a little bit more, you know, hey, with Florida State, you know, Vic lost to Florida State, and Lamar Jackson, you know, torched Florida State. So he kind of specified that's why he was saying that. Then at the very end of the show, I said, hey, dude, I know you said he's better. Who's faster? And Vic didn't hesitate to claim that title.
You bet.
He said, look, if I just had ankle surgery a month ago, I think I could still run high 4.5. some of the pride kind of perked up a little bit there. But as a player, Lamar, you start, to me, with the arm strength to make every throw. He can really generate a lot of velocity, even though he's like a flipper more than a thrower. He doesn't get anything out of his lower half. He gets way, 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 way too narrow at the top, and then which causes him to get real wide with his stride. But he doesn't generate any velocity from his lower half. He just flips it, and he's got tremendous arm strength. And then you just talk about his ability to create, take off, and destroy pursuit angles. I've never seen a quarterback ruin pursuit angles quite like this dude. I mean, you see a safety get on a track, and it's like about 4 steps in, they go, uh-oh, yeah, that's the wrong angle. That dude is gone.
Daniel Jeremiah, my guest. I love it. One last thought. You've called Notre Dame offensive lineman Quentin Nelson, quote, the nastiest offensive line prospect I have ever evaluated, end quote. What do you see from him on film that makes you say that? And then how much does that translate to success in the NFL?
Well, I mean, he's look, there's a lot better ways to spend your evenings this time of year than trying to comb through 35 interior offensive line prospects on tape.
Right.
But literally, my son is 14, Jim. He was in the other room. And I'm like, get over here. You got to see this. And I think he was expecting to see, you know, some unbelievable run or catch. And I'm showing him this guard from Notre Dame just pulverizing people. I mean, you don't see guys get moved and thrown on the ground as violently as he does. You just don't see it. He has got rare, rare power and strength. And his highlight film is going to be the best of any draft prospect in this draft. I'm telling you, you watch the coverage that we're going to have. You're going to see all these fancy runs and throws and tackles and interceptions. That'll be the most talked about highlight film we show.
Pastor Norris. Pastor Norris, my friend, how are you?
Hey, Jim, how are you, buddy?
I'm great. Pastor, how about you? How are things?
I'm great. I just want you to know that I'm so proud of you. I started following you in 1996. I'm a big Steeler fan. The last time the Cowboys and the Steelers played in the Super Bowl. And I'm also proud of Truckers Nation. So I'm out in Louisiana somewhere, and they had a woman on, I think they call her a sports babe or something like that. Anyway, I'm strolling around the AM station, and I hear you. And I locked in, and I'm like, oh, my God, I love this guy. And, buddy, I have been following your career for almost 22 years now. And I'm telling you right now, Jim, you have Clergyman Nation and Truckers Nation in your corner, buddy. Keep it up. God bless you. And we're right there with you.
Pastor Norris, my man, I've got something to say to you. Thou shalt get racked. There it is. Monday in the books. I appreciate you very much. Thank you for listening and watching and podcasting. And then check back for more Daily Jungle tomorrow. See you then. I'm out.